Welcome to Inconvenient,
an international podcast where we talk about what moves or changes the world today.
This is Ale.
And this is Ani.
Thank you for tuning in. Welcome back to another episode of Inconvenient Podcast. Today, we want to get across to our listeners something very important.
About 75% of Black and Asians and 58% of Hispanics say they have experienced discrimination or have been treated unfairly because of their race or ethnicity, at least from time to time.
In the survey published by a Pew Research Center, more than 80% of Black adults say the legacy of slavery affects the position of Black people in America today, including 59% who say it affects it a great deal. And about 78% say that the country hasn't gone far enough when it comes to giving Black people equal rights with whites. And 50% say it's unlikely that the country will eventually achieve racial equality.
But police brutality has been a problem for years. According to CNBC, last year, more than 1,000 of people were killed by police. According to a research group called Mapping Police Violence, Black people accounted for 24% of those killed, despite making up only about 13% of the population.
And despite the large number of police killings annually, police are actually almost never charged for excessive force violations. And between 2013 and 2019, 99% of killings by police resulted in no charges.
It's a huge problem in the US, but racism is a worldwide issue that we need to talk about.
Inconvenient Podcast has been created to talk about social issues. And racism is such an important one. Despite time passing by and huge fights for human rights, people of color are discriminated all over the world every single day. And as two white women, both me and Annika, we are very aware of our white privilege, which follows us wherever we go and whichever country we visit. Also, living both in Poland and Switzerland, we never had to worry about the fact that someone is going to judge us differently or treat us unequally because of the color of our skin. Moreover, the more we travel the world, the more our privilege is visible to us, and the more we can see it being a part of our life.
That's why today we want to say to every Black person out there, every person of color, we understand that we will never understand what you go through or how you feel, but we will stand by you. Today we want to talk more about racism from their perspective with two inspiring activists and new friends of us, Chet and Michelle.
Chet Lloyd G. Montero began his career in 2013 as a communications trainer to senior leaders in France. At the same time, he volunteered and became the head of learning resources in Asia of the Global Changemakers Network and helped to facilitate the translation of the GCM toolkits to different languages. He launched projects such as Politically Correct, which gives a voice to women behind bars, and week-long events that engage the French, Belgium, and Swiss embassies in the Philippines to support NGOs and charities annually. Chet is a UK certified investment banker, and he continues to pursue his passion in music, languages, and travel.
Michelle Washington holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in Theater Arts with specialization in production from the University of the District of Columbia. She also holds a Master of Arts degree with a certification in Women's Studies and received a certification in Arts Management. After graduating, Michelle co-founded the Creative Ascent Company, which focused on amateur performance within Washington, D.C.'s Black community. Thereafter, Michelle founded the She Company, a multicultural women's art organization that presented visual art exhibits, performance poetry readings, and small theater play productions. After that, Michelle moved to Manila, Philippines. While there in 2007, she founded and managed MMQ Theater and Events Group, a multicultural nonprofit arts and charity company, and it donated millions of Philippine pesos to women's and children's charities throughout the Philippines, creating a theater for social change. MMQ partnered with expat and Filipino theater artists, creating a bridge between the multicultural expat and the Filipino community. In Manila, Michelle also taught introduction to theater and theater management classes. That's how Chad and she met. Now back in the United States, after 15 years away, Michelle has resumed teaching theater. She is now a professor at Bowie State University, where she teaches introduction to theater, theater history, and acting for non-majors. Michelle is also once again partnering with like-minded organizations and individuals to produce theater that will make the world a better place for everyone.
As a lot of our listeners may already know, on May 25th in United States, in Minnesota, George Floyd, who is an African-American man, was murdered by a white policeman there. And this caused a lot of discussion around racism, not only in the U.S. Again, but in the whole world. We also observe that in our countries, like in Poland, and I think Annika also in Switzerland. First, we want to ask you, like, what are your thoughts about this response for those events in the US, but also like from what you hear all around the world?
Well, I find that it was terrible what happened. I mean, it was like a horror movie, wasn't it? What we saw, and if you watch the whole video and videos from, say, other angles, and some of the police cam has come to the fore now also, and you see just the lack of compassion, for one thing, is really stunning to me. The lack of feeling regarding this. I mean, it was just, and I think the thing that hurt me the most, and I think this was heard by people around the world when he called his mother. I mean, can you imagine? You're in a horrible situation that you really can't get out of, and you call your mother? I think that was the most heartrending thing about all of this. And quite frankly, but this is not the first time this has happened. I want to make sure that people understand that this has been going on, unfortunately, for the past 401 years. Finally, I guess because it's on video, people are recognizing that this is going on and the injustice has been going on. And so it's time. It's time now to really, it's behind time. It's really late, but okay, fine. Better late than now. Now we need to get something done, some really concrete measures to make sure that the police are policed, quite frankly.
And Chet, what is your take on that, if you want to add something?
When we heard about it, I started going online. I started checking how people would see it, how people would receive the idea. To my surprise, everyone, not just here in the Philippines, but also my friends across the globe, they're showing how incompassionate these people are. And what I also saw were some, I'm not quite sure if it's publicity or some angle of the story that are being displayed. They're trying to discredit the person, the victim. They're trying to put on a different kind of story to what was already horrible. They're trying to put on a story, a different story to an already horrible one. And for me, it is not my experience that I am there, I am in the US, but seeing something like that, it definitely made me feel like asking myself the question, what are they doing over there to prevent that? I mean, I have read about the history. I have seen stories, not just this one, but also the others in the past. And it seems like it's a cycle that hasn't been broken yet. You know, I come from a country that talks about discrimination and racism too. And they say that, you know, this one so far has gotten so much attention that now, I wouldn't say we're at a breaking point, but we're at a point wherein we want real justice. We want some changes happening, and not just the passive action. You know, you're going to be thrown a different news just so that your attention will be diverted. So people around the globe just want something better to be given at us in terms of change.
Exactly like what Michelle said, and I think it's really important to underline it, that this has caused a lot of people to talk about it because we have everything on video and a lot of people saw it, and that sometimes only when we can see something we can understand the terrifying consequences of what has been happening for such a long time, and that the action actually, it is the deadline for that is for a long time ago already, right?
One of the things that I want to provide a little context, if
yes,
you don't mind.
Yes.
So I grew up in the South, the Southern United States. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a place where the Ku Klux Klan started. Quite frankly, I think I told you this, Chet, a long time ago. One of the founding fathers of my hometown was one of the grand dragons of the Ku Klux Klan. And I remember as a child, him being the highest, the biggest Chevrolet dealership in the tri-state area. I mean, you know, and he would get on television and people knew who he was and what he was. But, you know, he was a successful businessman, the largest Chevrolet dealership in the tri-state area. And so there was an amount of respect, but we all knew who and what he was. And so, yes, I have seen the Klan actually in my lifetime. I have seen the results of the Klan and their work, let's put it that way, in my lifetime. So I need to put this in context for you, just so you understand that when I see these things like George Floyd, when I see these things with the killings by police people, it just saddens me even more. It really just saddens me even more because it's almost as if any progress that might be made is quickly shut down, and it's quickly made worse by something worse happening. And so, I while I'm hopeful that there will be justice, I mean, to me, the main thing that the protests around the world were about is that there needs to be justice for Mr. Floyd. I really hope that that happens. I really do. But I do see a counter movement that is, like Chet said, talking about, well, what about Mr. Floyd? What was he? Was he a criminal before? I mean, you're looking all into his background, trying to create a counter narrative, even though what was done to him was so awful. They're still trying to vilify this gentleman, and it's so upsetting. It's just really, it blows the mind, does it not?
And for me, it's infuriating how they're putting this case onto trial by publicity, like checking the personality of the person, of the victim, the history of the victim, and then checking who this victim was before that incident happened. And I'm in my head, and in the head, perhaps in the mind, the rest of the people around the globe, it's not a question of what he has done in the past, but what was done to him at that specific instance.
How do you personally define racism and racial injustice? And maybe if you feel comfortable with that, how does it relate to your personal experience?
Racism is good question. Let me give you, I love telling stories. I'm a history teacher. My mother was a missionary in the church, and so she would often say to me, picked girl with pigtails, she'd often say to me, well, Michelle, honestly, you don't look at a person's exterior. What the real value, the real treasure is inside each person. And so you need to not look at the color on the outside, but you need to ask yourself, what color are these people on the inside? And so a lot of people tend to just stop on that surface thing and say, oh, okay, well, because you're Black, and especially in this country, I don't know how it is in your specific perspective countries or respective countries, but in this country, first impressions are everything, right? You've heard that saying. And so my thing is that racism is the looking at a person only for surface, only the surface, only looking at the person from a superficial point of view, which is really reducing the person to something so simplistic, it's nearly a crime to do, because you don't know if you not look in that person's eyes and actually looked into their heart, you don't know what type of person that is. You just don't. So I think that for me, racism is a superficial construct that society has created in order to provide some sort of shorthand on what we should or shouldn't feel toward a person. It's very superficial, and it's quite ignorant, if you ask me.
I also relate to that concept of social construct. For me, it starts from history. It starts as how a country was founded, how a country was built. So I come from a country where we had several other, so we I come from a country where we had several countries invading us. First was the Chinese migration in the past for trade, and then Spaniards or just or Spain. Then came the Japanese and the Americans. So if you would notice, if I go back through history, there were several conquerors that invaded the land, and we would see how these people put into our heads the hierarchy in the society that we have now today. Like if you have fairer skin, that must have meant your ancestors crossbred with different other countries, like let's say the Spanish or the Americans or the Japanese, and that gives us a certain idea that they're more superior. Mm-hmm. My definition of racism is all about opportunities given to a certain group. Like, for example, an individual who looks darker than the rest of the population must have stayed native or local, quote unquote. And that provides him lesser opportunities than the rest of the population have fairer skin. It's also not just a concept of tint, but also the opportunities provided to you from generation to generation. Of course, that's rooting from the poverty that a certain class has gotten, because let's say the opportunities provided to them were not as high as those, for example, with Filipino American parents or Filipino European parents who have gotten the opportunities to go outside of the country, better themselves, things like that. Also, from my experience, I work in an industry that's quite tough in this sense that opportunities sometimes, although I don't think that it's actively done, but of course, if you compare like a university degree taken from a specific Asian country versus another degree of the same level, let's say college, taken from a white country, or I would like to use an example of a German country, let's say. Mm-hmm. You compare those two, more often than not, the privilege would exist. It's like a positive bias being received from the European or towards that European nation. I'm not saying that it happens all the time, but from my experience in finance and investment banking, like the credentials, even though you have a master's degree and you got it from an Asian country versus another individual applying for the same role, but the master's degree was taken from a European or the American country, then it would be different. The treatment is different. So for me, being inequality is defined by the opportunities provided to a certain group or class.
I live in Poland, so it's a totally different social structure, so to say, than US, for example, in a way, and society that is really not very diverse in terms of skin color or culture. It's very homogenic. But generally, also when talking with my friends that I know in US, that very often, for example, they say, hey, but yeah, you know, like, I'm not racist, so this is not a problem for me. And the things that you chat saying and Michelle, and what I want to ask you about, that the thing with racism is it can be individual. So it can come from you as an individual person that has a prejudice against the person who has a different skin color than you have. But it, the problem here that we're talking about is much broader than this. So it's more racism that is institutionally validated for years and years and in different contexts.
The African-American scholar Cornel West put it best. He said, now is the time when our white brothers and sisters, our Asian, our Native American, although I hate to ask Native Americans to do anything, because quite frankly, they have been decimated by prejudice and racism and just so unfairly treated that many of them do not exist anymore. As a matter of fact, in talking about racism, I don't think we need to forget Native Americans. I mean, Native Americans, my gosh, there are whole tribes that don't even exist anymore. But I think the solution is for all of us to come together and recognize our biases. I mean, all of us have some prejudice or another. I don't know whether it's from a person or whether you like this particular pattern of China or not, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Better than the other one, but all of us have our biases, and so I think if we were to really be honest with ourselves, and see, that's the problem, and that's the challenge as well, is that can I look inside my heart and say, okay, where are my biases, and how do I correct that, and also so that I'm not ignorant, because I refuse to be an ignorant human being, and so I know there's biases there. How can I help to become a better human being, and also how can I help another person who I know is not treated fairly? I think that's the first step. Even though you may think you're not racist, you're not biased, whatever, and think, the point of the matter is, I think now, specifically now, is for all of us to look and find a way to help each other. Instead of talking about whether you're racist or not, look toward being anti-racist. I've heard that a lot, and I like this idea. Work toward, okay, well, this is not a problem for me, then, okay, so it's not a problem for you, then what are you going to do next? If it's not a problem for you, then what are you going to do next? Are you going to do nothing? You understand? Because there's a time when something needs to be done.
Yeah.
And so instead of saying, and to me, it's quite dismissive too, don't you think? For someone to just offhandly say, oh, well, I'm not racist, so this is not my problem.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree. That's very dismissive and very also ignorant, because as you said, like, we all have prejudice in us, all of us in different cultures, that we hold prejudices against different people, and we all need to work on that.
That's the thing. You got to ask yourself the question. When people tell you, oh, okay, I'm not racist, well, the next question you need to ask them, oh, okay, so you're not racist, so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do to make the situation better? And quite frankly, it is everybody's problem. Because the more we divide each other, the more we don't work together, we're not going to progress very much, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. We're keeping ourselves from seeing our potential.
And also, I would like to say that there are like two kinds of people. in the globe, in the whole world. The first one would say that, okay, I'm doing something for this. I'm helping you out. And the other group, the other kind of people would be, nothing's happening to me. So I'm not being inconvenienced by your existence. So I think this second group of people, it's not just apathy that you see. It's more of like, I'm not being impacted, so why should I be doing anything about it? If you look at it at a deeper level, you would see that the level of privilege they have must have come from an economic status, a certain social status that doesn't allow them to see what's there in the ground. It doesn't allow them to actually be elbows to elbows with whoever is experiencing these kinds of problems. I think if we're going to find a creative solution to this, it's no longer a question of your status. Let's take this pandemic as a sort of comparison. It's no longer a question of who you are, where you are in the society. All you need to do is actually check, open your eyes. Even nowadays, if we're going to find a creative solution again to this, we can use those, not just social media, but check the behavior of the people. What do we watch? What kind of shows or programs do we listen to every day? And perhaps we can inject, you know, like seeds, putting those seeds into the minds of the people, trying to let them understand slowly, because it's not a concept that is easy to digest. If I belong to that second group of people who are not necessarily touched by these everyday trivialities, or for them, quote unquote, then we need to find a way to get to them. It's a concept in marketing. It's a concept in communication where you focus on whoever receives the message. You have to understand that not a lot of people actually does watch the news. Not a lot of people listen to radio programs. Some people just sit on the couch, watch Netflix. Some people would just go onto their phones, go on Twitter, check their feed. And it depends on what kind of brands they follow. Mm-hmm. So for example, if we look at it as an institutional point or perspective, these brands, these big brands can show us a form of solidarity. Or the series on Netflix, of course, I would see, I'm also a fan of shows or series online, and I watch these shows. And whenever I see something that hits me to the core, like a specific episode that talks about LGBTQ+, or a specific episode that talks about the children's rights or racism or racial inequality, I keep on wondering if that touches me to the core, to my own core, what more to other people who are probably watching the same show or listening to the same programs? Mm-hmm. That can be a good creative solution to this problem. It's no longer us just shouting every single time. We need to find better ways to solve this problem.
Education, you've got to educate people. And people have got to want to be educated themselves too, though. See, that's the thing. Are these people who are racist, are they open to change? Are they open? And why are they racist? What happened in their life, or what ideology were they taught at home or in school that makes them this way? And how do we start to try to change some of their minds? I mean, that's the thing. It's really, really difficult when you've got people who are, what do you call it, deceptive clan members at night and your buddy during the day. What do you do?
So you both, I think, Michelle, you also mentioned the quote of the political activist Angela Davis, who said, it's not enough to be against racism, you have to be actively an anti-racist. And yeah. I think for me, as being like a really privileged white person, I think I will never truly truly understand, like, how does it feel to be discriminated? But it's important to stand, not only saying like I'm against that, but really standing up for that. So I was wondering, because you also mentioned education, that this is like the key to work against racism. So I was wondering, can you tell us more about white privilege? What are you thinking about that? And how should we talk about it? Or what should white people know to see that, oh yeah, we need to really actively work against that? And
Reverend Sharp just put it so well the other day at the first memorial service for Mr. Floyd. He said, we're not asking for a favor. We're not asking for any special treatment, but just get your knee off our necks so we can lift up and be who we were meant to be. And so it's a matter of, when you see something, I hate to put it this way, but say something. Speak out when it's appropriate and say, well, you know, that don't look right, y'all. You know, I mean, I've even had to say to my black brothers and sisters, hey, that, y'all, no, that's just not right. That you know, if you're gonna talk about something, you need to come correct. And that's not correct. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem. This thinking that you cannot change lives, you cannot change anything. Why even discuss this when nothing's going to be done? Those types of attitudes are the type of attitudes that keep us in this rut and keep us ignorant. We have got to find a way to open up hearts. And I'm not sure what the solution is to that. Last time I checked, I wasn't God, so I don't know. But I don't know all the answers, right? But I do know that if other people, other minorities and the white base would stop and think about their inclinations and how they can make a difference, then a difference will be made.
I completely agree. For me, this phrase, white privilege, can also be the solution to this problem. The more privilege you have, your whiteness, your economic status, your social status, and all other privileges that you may have been born into, you can use that same set of privileges to help others, like be an ally. Yeah, that concept might be in LGBT community, an ally, wherein you have a set of heteronormative people and experiences, and then all of a sudden they're trying to present you in a good light. They're helping you out and being not really a savior, but a friend to you. Like when you have, just like what Prof. M was saying, when other minorities and other whites stand up to what is wrong, it helps create a ripple effect, because it would make people think, what is it that these people are fighting for? What is it that they're saying? Because we may be saying something that's not really aggressive. Like, for example, say things in a better manner and communicate things lightly. Mm-hmm. And when minorities or the white group with privileges would just say, you know, that's wrong. You gotta help people frame things in a more positive manner so that conversations will keep on going. And so that we will not go back to step one, because that's what's happening here. We keep on going back to step one.
Oh, absolutely, Chet. You're so right. And I love what you were talking about as far as using your privilege to help others. You know, recognizing your privilege is the first thing. I mean, let's think about this. I am an African-American female who is educated. Now, many people, when they meet me, if I don't say anything, they would have no idea, okay? And they may make these assumptions, which happens to me from time to time, because as I'm a normal, that makes me a normal black person, in that I face racism almost every single day. But even with that, what I want to do is use my education, use my status as a teacher, a college professor, use my status as the head of a theater company, an arts organization, to help others, to raise voices on the stage as well as in the classroom, to also guide my students toward okay, you can, this is to get you ready for when you go out there in the real life, when you're not in this bubble in an HBCU, historically black college and university where I teach, Bowie State. You're not around black people all the time when you're out there in the real world. So we need to get you ready to go out there and present your excellent self. And so those are things that I can teach you. How to present yourself, how to speak with eloquence, how to express yourself and your art. And also another thing that I do, and I'm not bragging or anything like that, because I wish I could do more, and I'm working toward finding ways to do more. But every show I put on stage, I give money to charity, to women and children's charities throughout the world. Women and children are our future. And so we need to make things better for them. And quite frankly, white males have had these privileges for since the beginning of time. So yeah. I want to give other people, if I can, when I can, I should, and I will, give somebody else another step up. Even though I've not gone to the top of the mountain, still, if I help others get up there, feel better. And I become a better person. And that's all anybody can ask for, right? Yeah.
Another set of privileges what we have is language. Do you know how many people speak Chinese or how many people speak French? The mere fact that right now I'm able to communicate in languages that can reach different audiences. I'm a Filipino. I speak Tagalog. And yet I need to converse in a language that's not my native tongue in order for other people to understand the message I want to convey. And it is just like what Prof. M mentioned earlier, we can use that privilege because it is a privilege I'm able to communicate in the languages that I speak. I'm able to reach out to foreign dignitaries like the French governments, Belgian governments, Swiss governments, to communicate with them in French or the Anglophone countries who speak in English. Whatever inequality I notice nowadays, I can simply write to them in their target language or their host in their native tongue, and then tell them, this is the problem and I need your support in this. It catches their attention when you're able to talk to them in their own language. It is a privilege.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I hadn't even thought about that yet. You are so right. You are so right. I'm also a French citizen, thanks to my husband. And so, well, and thanks to me, because I am the person that studied hard for the exam to get citizenship.
Absolutely, yeah.
But exactly. You're absolutely right. Where to be able to speak another language is a privilege. And it helps us to cross different barriers. I mean, we're doing this right now. We're all speaking in English, and we're sharing this with the world. And so the world is able to experience. And thank you, Alexandra and Annika. This is amazing that you're doing this so that we can talk to the world and perhaps make a difference this way, because it's a privilege to be on Zoom.
Yes.
Especially as hard a time I had today getting on Zoom. I'm very privileged right now.
Everything that you're saying is so, both of you, is so powerful. So thank you, because I feel that these are the voices that we need more of. We need to hear more about exactly about that. And I really want to also say to our listeners to ask them to share that conversation and to really do what we are encouraging you to do, to really acknowledge your privilege and recognize it and try to use it to lift up others. All of our privileges also bring us like here, that we can be doing that, that we have things simple as that we have the access to Zoom, that we have the access to internet, that we have the abilities, we got the opportunities to learn how to use those tools and how to use them to bring this podcast to you.
And it's all about understanding each other, really taking that next step to try to really see each other Mm-hmm. Instead of just surface. I talk a lot about that, especially to my students as well. Things are more complex than meets the eye. And you have to, in order to be a better person, be willing to look underneath. Mm-hmm. And be ready to face what's underneath that. Be ready to face what's underneath that and be ready to try to improve it. Mm-hmm. If need be. And I think that you two ladies are definitely doing that. I commend you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's right. And I absolutely agree with you, Prof. Pham, because even with strangers, I mean, look at us four, right? Initially, if we do not know each other, but we are able to engage in thought, in conversation. So mm-hmm. if four people can do that, how much more mm-hmm. if you can do that in your own communities, people you already know? It will be a lot easier to actually tell them, you know what, this idea is a little bit, I do not agree with it. Perhaps you can mm-hmm. change it, or perhaps you can talk more about it to help me convince you. It's not about converting everyone into an ally, but making everyone understand what mm-hmm. is a better way of dealing with things. That is a small win, and we need small successes every now and then. Whatever kind of inequality it may be economic, social, or racial, we need those small wins to help build a better, it sounds a cliche, right? But it helps build a better future for us all. That's what we need at this point, the small wins.
Thank you so much for all your words. It was really inspiring to talk to you. And I think, as you now mentioned it in your last statement, it's really important to talk, to just have this conversation. So really, thank you again for being on the podcast. So thank you for listening to our interview. If you want to learn more about Michelle and Chet, we will put their Instagram profiles into the description of this episode. Once again, we want to encourage you to learn about what you can do to stop racism. Stand up for everyone who experiences racial injustice.
And we want to say goodbye to you. And as always, we have a question for our audience. So please let us know what else we can do to effectively stop racism. Write your ideas to our email, inconvenient@aliverse.com, or slide into our DMs on Instagram @inconvenientpodcast. And don't forget to share the podcast with your friends if you liked it. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram @inconvenientpodcast. Hear you next time.